Hi, this is the Social Jello with Angelo show. My name's Angelo. I'm a social scientist, surfer, martial artist, and a whole lot of other things. Coming to you live from Kasai City, Japan, the Social Jello with Angelo show.
What's up, and welcome to another episode of the Social Jello with Angelo podcast. Today, I am covering, or I should say we are covering, old school jiu-jitsu versus new school jiu-jitsu with Kawilani Moorhead, a Kajikimbo black belt, BJJ black belt, and MMA coach. Did I get your name right?
You did.
Yes, I'm getting better at that. So there's this thing that happens in the conversation for people about old school jiu-jitsu and new school jiu-jitsu. We can bring this into other styles too, like old school Kenpo, new school Kenpo. I can pretty much say this about a lot of stuff. But in particularly sure. With jiu-jitsu, there's this weird thing happening where the new school jiu-jitsu guys are focusing more on what we would call sport jiu-jitsu. You see them scooting their butts on the floor. They're not doing that much striking anymore. A great example of this, I just had a nationally ranked black belt come into my school. He's my age, so he should technically be old school jiu-jitsu because he's like 42, 43. And he won the BJJ Nationals out here in Japan, and now he's retired. And I just got done doing some MMA sparring the night before at an MMA gym. And I was kind of sore from fighting guys younger than me. And I said, I'm kind of sore. And he's like, oh, yeah, did you get hit a lot? I'm like, you know, it's just MMA sparring. And then one of my other students that was there asks him, so how do you handle MMA sparring? He's like, oh, I've never done MMA. And he's like, oh, okay. He's like, oh, so you've done some kickboxing? I've never done any striking in my life. I don't know how to punch or kick or anything. And I'm a BJJ player, he said. Which was really, yeah. And then the student was kind of like, he's a white belt in BJJ, and he's sure. And he does some kickboxing. So he was just kind of like blown back by that statement because the average public believes or feels that if you do BJJ, that MMA, the whole story of UFC 1 was that MMA was founded by Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, like it's like a marriage of some sort.
Yeah,
but.
Yeah.
Nowadays, there's a split happening where people are calling themselves BJJ players. So
right.
That's my spiel on the topic. I'm going to grab this and just check it over. And what are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, so in the modern context, like you kind of have this, I'm not going to say a division, because let me first off say that BJJ, the sport of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, is beautiful. It's ever changing. It's very high pace. It's entertaining at times. So it's very beautiful. And there's a lot of guys that are really, really tough guys that are in there. But there's like this, there's this split that has happened now where you have a Gracie Jiu-Jitsu player, and then you have a BJJ player. And just to kind of keep it in the modern context of things, the differences in the two are not a lot, but they're a lot, right? Like you just mentioned, this BJJ player said, I don't know how to throw a punch. I've never done any kind of striking or anything like that. In the GJJ side and the BJJ side, they're different. But on a very basic level, it's the distance in which the fight is fought and the mentality, the mindset behind that training or that fight. And like with Hoyce, with UFC 1 and continuing, he exemplified a large portion of what Gracie Jiu-Jitsu is, where today's sport of it is, it's not even a quarter of that. They're focusing heavily on takedowns, if it's a good school, and then grappling, right? Ground grappling without strikes. So the two, looking at it from the outside, you would say, oh, they're very, very similar. And they are, but there's some very heavy details and some no-nos that a GJJ guy wouldn't do versus what a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu guy would do. And again, both of them come from the single tree, right, of Jiu-Jitsu, coming from Japan and then the whole story in Brazil and then coming to America. It's all the same, but some differences in it. And they're both beautiful, like I said. But for me personally, like my mission in jiu-jitsu is to keep the culture of jiu-jitsu alive and what it represented, and then trying to better myself off of that.
And then you mentioned something right now, and I'll let you figure out how you're going to navigate that one. This idea of Gracie Jiu-Jitsu versus Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. Now, a little bit about myself. I originally started in... I started in Kajagembo. Let's get that out of the way. I started in a mixed martial art, and the branch I worked in was very heavily emphasized on... We had a wrestling coach, so we had a lot of emphasis on takedowns and ground and pounds. A tiny bit of submissions, not too much. So to kind of go even further into more newaza or just ground fighting, not the idea that I'm going to knock them down and stay on top, but how to get someone off me from like guard and stuff, because wrestling is not going to cover guard. I ended up at my university, they were offering Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, no-gi, or regular plain clothes from Gracie Baja. So for those of you that don't know, Gracie Baja is this huge... You should know, really. I don't think I need to describe what Gracie Baja is to you. But if you but under the assumption that you don't know, then I'm sorry if I just offended you, because I don't know what the fuck he's talking about. It's a huge school. It's international, and it's run by Carlos Gracie. Now, I don't want to go into a long spiel of... There's a lot of stuff I can go there because podcasts I've heard about it, but we'll just keep it at that. And I'm going to stop it right there and say, that's the Gracie Jiu-Jitsu that I learned at the time. And then as time went by, I did that for about 5 years. It was always no-gi, always in a t-shirt, always at the university. So there was no belts. They always told us, if you want a belt, just come into our classes and sign up. And I just wasn't interested in signing up for anything. I like the idea that my tuition was covered by my school and I didn't have to pay him extra money for the training. So I never ranked in it, did it for 5 years, got what I wanted out of it, went to Japan, started competing out here, and realized I need another place to do jiu-jitsu, because I was just doing... my MMA gym had a submission wrestling specialist, which is really... I don't know how it is in America, but in Japan, they have this thing called submission wrestling, which is not to be confused with no-gi jiu-jitsu. They look very similar, though. Like, if you looked at I thought it was no-gi jiu-jitsu. And it wasn't until I ended up coming back to Gracie Baja to work more on fundamentals, because they opened one near my... I live in the middle of nowhere. There was no BJJ school near me. And the nearest place was Gracie Baja. That's the only reason I picked it. It was just convenient. So I went back there to find out that the jiu-jitsu I learned from these guys, most of the techniques were illegal. Neck cranks, heel hooks, smothering, facial smothering, like where you can grab the nose to keep him from breathing, to catch the choke. Yeah. All stuff that you can do in MMA, by the way, all stuff you can do in MMA, but you cannot do in IBJJF rules, which at that point, I thought I was competing in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu tournaments, and it turns out I was competing in catch wrestling.
Gotcha.
You know, because it's all the paperwork was in Japanese. So like I'm looking at it and I'm asking my wife, what's it say? Well, the rules say this and this. And okay, so it's jiu-jitsu. And I really didn't... it was years later that I looked at the forums. I'm like, wait a second. If I look at this on my phone, I translate it, this doesn't say no-gi jiu-jitsu. This says catch wrestling. I'm like, so I've been competing in catch wrestling for like 8 years. And then I jumped into Brazilian jiu-jitsu. And these guys are yelling at me, saying that I'm breaking all these rules. And the best they could do is I come in, I'm like, okay, so what do you guys want to start me off? We're going to start you off as a white belt because you don't know what you're doing. And I was like, whoa, okay. Well, you know, I really don't care. As long as whatever you make the call, I just need to get some training. Yeah. So they said, the best we can do is a three-stripe white belt so you can do free sparring. And I'm like, all right, if that's how you all feel. And I was just kind of, thrown off by it, because walking in the door, I was tapping out their black belts. And the first week they said it was because I didn't know the proper IBJJF rules and I was using illegal techniques, as they put it.
Yeah.
And then by the second week I figured out that rule set and started tapping them with their rule set. But whatever. Mm-hmm. Again, I'm not sore about it. The point of that story is that was supposedly, and I'm going to let you navigate this, and I don't know if I'm dropping a bomb. We talked about this off camera, so if it is, just let me know.
Sure. Yeah, no.
I was under the impression that that was the official Gracie Jiu-Jitsu type of jiu-jitsu. That's what they told me.
Yeah.
Now, what do you think?
So, again, it comes from the Gracie family, right? Again, Japanese jiu-jitsu, judo, at that time in Brazil, the two names were synonymous. It was not a different thing that they were doing. Story goes, got passed down to the Gracie brothers, Grandmasters Carlos Gracie Sr. and Elio. And both of the brothers working together, they modified jiu-jitsu and made up their own product of Gracie jiu-jitsu. And they didn't create anything new. I mean, there's interviews of Grandmaster Elio saying, I didn't create anything new. I just modified things. So it comes from the same lineage. Now, like with your lineage there, I'm a proponent of lineage. I think it's good and bad, right? I listened to your last podcast that you had on lineage, and I think it's good and bad. But like the lineage that you come from, Carlos Gracie Jr. comes from the senior side, where there's the Elio side that does things. They both in the same branch of the family do the same jiu-jitsu. Some the Gracie family is so large, and I've met a lot of them and got to train with a lot of them, and they all say like the Gracie family is so big. Some people stick to the more traditional side, and some people like to do the innovative sport thing. But it all comes down to this, and this isn't controversial. With I say jiu-jitsu and I say Gracie jiu-jitsu. I try to keep BJJ out of it because I like people to know like what I stand for. But at the end of the day, what we identified as the six pillars of jiu-jitsu, and the Valente brothers kind of coined this, but we kind of modified it to suit us a little bit better. If you are practicing the six pillars of jiu-jitsu, which are surprise self-defense techniques, weapons defenses, you have striking, both defensive and offensive. You have takedowns, which naturally comes more from the judo-esque side. There is wrestling in it today. The ground grappling, which is kind of the bread and butter that everybody sees grappling about it today. And then the most important pillar that is the glue that holds everything together is the philosophy. And the philosophy of jiu-jitsu is not purely just how to be a better person, how to be a better husband, a better wife. It's situational awareness. It's how to talk your way out of fights. It's how to avoid the fight. That's what the philosophy is. And if you are not practicing all six pillars of jiu-jitsu, then you are doing niches of jiu-jitsu, which is kind of what we see in BJJ today. So in my point of view, if you are practicing all six pillars of jiu-jitsu in some fashion, you are practicing the traditional side of jiu-jitsu, the Gracie jiu-jitsu, that is, and this is controversial, I believe, endangered, going extinct.
Okay, fair enough. I don't mind some controversy, but I don't want to get you in trouble. So what I want to say is, if I understand you correctly, if I were to use those six pillars to analyze what I was, I'll say it. You don't have to say it, I'll say it. If I use those six pillars to analyze what I saw happening here in Japan, and I'm not going to say this is not happening everywhere, okay? I'm just going to talk about, and I always say this, when I talk about my experiences, why do I talk about my experiences? These are my experiences, my personal experiences.
Sure.
So when I'm giving you my opinion, and I'm not so much talking about you as far as also my viewers, I'm giving you my personal experience and my opinion on that personal experience. In that, because I study psychology, I don't like making generalized statements. So I'm not going to say that all of Gracie Baja is doing this. That's my disclaimer right there. Before we go. Because I have great friends. Look, even though I don't train with Gracie Baja anymore, I have great friends that are still in there training. I have nothing against them. We still train together. I still cross-train. Some of the best advice I get is still from some of my Gracie Baja brothers and sisters. We still talk.
Yeah,
I know. It sounds like I got excommunicated.
No matter what jiu-jitsu lineage you come from, right off the bat, whether I maybe believe it's the right way or you believe it's the right way, they are serving their community in some fashion with the jiu-jitsu that they love. So leave it at that, man. That's good.
I'm not going to leave it there, though. So if I were to look at those six pillars, to be honest, at the place I was training at in Japan, that sixth part was never mentioned. And it might be because in Japanese society, they don't tend to talk like it might be a Japanese culture thing where they tend not to get very personal about your own personal business. Right. So
yeah.
the idea of telling someone to be a better person, or if I understand your sixth pillar correctly, this is the kind of talk that we would have as an instructor when we're teaching self-defense, of when the proper time is for de-escalation and escalation.
Yeah.
We tell the kids stuff like, hey, make sure you tell a teacher, try to avoid the conflict. You only do this move under the worst case scenario, but if there's ways to run away or tell a teacher, or even while it's happening, continue to ask and call for help. I always tell my students this. When you're in an altercation, keep yelling out help.
Even
if you're winning, keep yelling out help. You can straight up be in a ground and pound and the guy's trying to hit you and you're in the top and you're hitting him in the face, and keep yelling out, help, somebody help me. Because if someone's watching you, you tried everything you could to stop it, and you kept asking for help from an authority or something. And you didn't want to hurt them, but you had to do what you got to do at the same time. So but I never saw anything like that being ever explained at the school I went to. So that sixth pillar so far is missing. And just going off of that, what it sounds like, if I'm understanding you correctly, within the actual Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu community, there are certain schools that have very strict definitions to call it Gracie Jiu-Jitsu, and the six pillars is kind of a guideline for that. Is that correct?
If you are in the Gracie family, you use the Gracie name, right? Because that's your name. You're representing your family. But again, every school is different. Every culture is different. Typically, the folks in my experience that when their lineage as a black belt, that to me, that's where it really matters as a black belt, as an instructor. If your teacher came from a line directly from Grandmaster Elio, you're typically following the six pillar structure in some fashion.
All right. So it's not like there's like really strict guidelines to this. So they can not learn, for example, the person cannot learn any strike. Because I was going to say, you said striking. You mentioned striking in there. And they did zero. Like, they would practice for an average of 5 minutes a class and it would be every other class, not every class, how to defend against someone who's trying to strike you.
Sure.
Simulated like we do our like you would see a karate class or a kempo class.
Right.
A guy throws a wild. I used to tell my friend that I convinced to join because he couldn't train with me. So I told him to go there. And I always told him, this will work great against someone who doesn't know what they're doing.
Right. Yeah,
it's that your typical haymaker punch or whatever. But they never teach you how to actually strike. And this was very apparent when sometimes they had to teach, if someone comes in for a roundhouse kick, like they had the move, it was in there. If someone comes in for a roundhouse kick, you have to do this. But then the instructor had no clue how to throw a roundhouse kick. Like,
he didn't.
And he couldn't. And he even said, I don't know how to kick. I don't know how to, I never learned how to punch or kick. So again, but at the same time, you're saying that it's not like, they're not very strict on this. It's like, obviously, if you have the Gracie name, you have the Gracie name, kind of end of story.
Now, I will say it depends on your association or what school, what flag you represent. Some schools are very, very strict of, hey, in your fundamentals program, you are teaching a very specific thing that we would like for you to teach. And then there's other schools that is, hey, do whatever you want. So it just differs. It depends on who you belong to and what flag you fly on how you're going to go about that.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Now let's go back to something else you mentioned, the traditional side, the traditional side versus the new stuff. So what is the traditional side? Like, what does that look like? Can you give me a concrete example of it?
For sure. The traditional side is based for self-defense and fighting. Period. The sport that comes after it, like everybody that practiced the self-defense side, everybody in that Gracie lineage competed. They represented their family. But that was a byproduct, right? From the stories of what my teachers have told me that have spent time directly with Grandmaster Elio, it was for self-defense, first and foremost. That is where the traditional side the concrete difference between the traditional side and the new school side.
And can you give me an example of what Gracie Jiu-Jitsu self-defense would look like? Like, what can you give me, like, step-by-step, person A does this, person B does this?
Yeah. So again, like with the first pillar, the self-defense techniques, that's just a pillar of self-defense. We, as you know, like, why did you start martial arts? To learn how to fight, right? So as you know, like, a fight is not just somebody headlocks you. There's so much more in that. But going off that first pillar, what do you do when somebody grabs you from behind? What do you do when somebody tries to throw a sucker punch at you? What, blah, blah, blah. That would be the first pillar. But then there's so many other levels of a fight that need to be covered. And that's what the rest of the pillars do. For instance, the striking portion. They're not only teaching you how to throw a jab and a cross. They're teaching you the distance management, what we call the red light, green light. The where you can get hit, where you can't get hit, how to defend against those strikes. So parries and covers, right? Along with that distance management, how do you use that striking to either keep that person away from you or to get in close, as we saw with Hoist in the UFC. And then we have our takedowns and things like that. Hey, if the fight has to go to the ground, it's so funny because a lot of people think just because I'm a jiu-jitsu guy, that I want to go to the ground all the time. It's so funny because in traditional Gracie schools, they actually preach the opposite in a lot of cases of sometimes we don't want to go to the ground, but if we do, we're specialists. So that's good for us if it does. But our mentality is, hey, what if there's multiple attackers? So the whole key with this is we're using all the pillars to essentially kind of be like MMA, of we're trying to be well-rounded with everything.
All right. And then I'll give you an example. And then let's see if you can give me an example. So when I'm saying like a concrete example, just so anybody who's, fast forward to, if you didn't know, if you haven't followed my show, I'm a brown belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, and I'm no longer under Gracie Baja. I'm now under a different lineage that's related to under Joe Moreira. And that goes into a different thing. I'm not going to go into long details. So when I'm listening to you talk, I know what you're talking about because I do Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. But
yeah,
for someone who doesn't, someone who's watching this show and is kind of like, these are all concepts that are kind of being thrown out mm-hmm. there. A lot, especially my striking guys and my Kempo, Kaju Kempo guys. Mm-hmm. In Kaju Kempo, a concrete example of what I'm talking about, a guy throws a haymaker, I bob and weave like a boxer. I'll do an outside block, grab his arm, kick him in the nuts, back fist to the face, grab the back of his t-shirt, slam him on the ground, control the arm, hyperextend it, and start punching him in the face, and then check cover for someone to take it behind me. Uh-huh. Can you give me an example of something like that for what you just said?
Yep. Manage the distance, manage the damage. If you have to block a punch, you're blocking the punch to get into the green light of a clinch, so essentially hugging them, for those that don't know. And then based off of that, do we throw them? Do we throw a knee and then get away? Or do we run away altogether? Essentially, you throw the punch, you defend yourself against the punch, you're doing some sort of takedown, and it's up to you whether you're going to go to the ground or if you want to disengage. Maybe they throw the punch and you clinch and you push them away and run away, or maybe you have to produce a weapon. That's essentially what a Gracie Jiu-Jitsu person would kind of follow the guidelines of if somebody threw a crazy punch.
Okay. All right. Okay. So there you go. So there's a concrete example for anybody who doesn't do Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. It's one thing to talk about these concepts. It's one thing to see them. And then when it comes to Gracie Jiu-Jitsu, I try not to put any videos because they're very, very, very protective of. I don't want to get in trouble with YouTube. I can have the conversation, but I don't want to put a video out there. So there you go. There's an example. There's a concrete example of what you just said. Maintain the distance. Take them down with some sort of takedown. And what you just mentioned, it's probably not going to be a wrestling takedown. It'll probably be more of a judo takedown, like an outside leg sweep. Like an outside leg sweep. And
a hip toss. An ogoshi, something like that.
An ogoshi gari. For those of you. So some judo move. So if you don't do judo, an outside leg sweep, an inside leg sweep. of some sort or a hip toss, and then followed up with, according to what you said at the tennis, though, there is a breakdown about where this engagement needs to end. Right. Right? So the you're constantly asking yourself, what's enough? And once I've done enough, it's time to get out of here. It is right. In the tenets that you just talked about from the school that you come from. And that's okay. So there you go. There's a concrete example. Now, that being said, you said new stuff. What's this new stuff?
Yeah.
What's it look
so
like?
So this new stuff. Yeah. So a lot of butt scooting. I'm not a fan. I'm not a fan. In my school, we're always teasing each other if somebody pulls guard or if somebody butt scoots. Like, we don't allow butt scooting in our school. That's just a no-no for us. But essentially, you're let's think about it in a competition sense, whether you're actually competing or you're in a school, which is 90% of what jiu-jitsu is today. You go to a school, you're going to slap hands, bump fists, and then you're going to roll. Or if you're drilling, you're probably going to start on the ground and do, I'm not even going to say something crazy. You're going to learn an arm bar from the guard, right? Maybe if you're in a good BJJ school, they will teach you some sort of takedowns, whether it be wrestling or judo. And it's all based off of the sport of jiu-jitsu, the guidelines, the rules, how to play the game, points, blah, blah, blah. Which I know nothing about, so don't ask me about points.
I was about to ask you.
No, dang it.
I was.
but essentially, like I know the points. I don't know the point system, right? I know why the points are there. I know how actually the points started. But I digress. The in a BJJ school, that's essentially what you're going to do is learn something that has to do with ground grappling that has nothing to do with strikes or self-defense on the ground. It just has to do with two people that know jiu-jitsu that are trying to beat each other at jiu-jitsu.
Okay. And let me see here. Okay, I thought my microphone was turned off. All right. So I got to admit, like, doing Brazilian jiu-jitsu, I'm guilty of butt scooting and pulling guard, especially with beginners, because I don't want them to get hurt.
Yeah.
I never know what a white belt on their first day is going to try to do there. I like what Ramsey Dewey said. He's like, when they were talking about that controversial thing that happened with a while back, and I'm going to try to avoid any, I'm just going to kind of speak vague terms.
Yep.
There was a guy who got sued because a white belt got injured at school. A BJJ guy's white belt got injured.
And yeah.
So he was talking on that incident, and he said, I feel sorry for the guy because when a white belt comes into your school, they are literally trying to kill you. Like, a white belt comes into the school, and their first instinct, if they've never done BJJ, is going to be that they're going to defend themselves, and they're going to feel like you're trying to kill them, when really, you didn't do this for a long time.
Right.
But their reaction is going to be 100% them trying to kill you, trying to get out of for whatever you're doing. So a lot of times, I'm guilty of butt scooting because I just don't feel comfortable, or pulling guard because I just don't feel comfortable single-legging someone on their first day. So or even not even on their first day, a few weeks in, even after they've signed up and signed, they always sign the waivers, but I don't feel really comfortable taking someone down until I've kind of figured out, especially if they're bigger than me, where they're at.
Right.
I'd rather do some butt scooting.
That leads into something there, because like like I mentioned earlier, 90% of jiu-jitsu today, probably even more than that, is sportive jiu-jitsu, right? But why is it that such a small percent of the population does jiu-jitsu? Because exactly what you just mentioned with the situation of getting sued and all that, because people are not fighters, right? That's for a very small little niche of the martial art community. People are there to learn how to defend themselves, how to lose weight, blah, blah, blah. But why is a white belt rolling? You know, why are we disservicing people to not fall in love with jiu-jitsu because they're so broken when they roll the first day, right? So that leads into something so interesting of in today's BJJ culture, I believe that the reason why we have such few followers in jiu-jitsu, even though, in my opinion, jiu-jitsu is the most famous martial art, why is it that we have such a small amount of people training it? And I believe it's the delivery and it's the culture in which you go into. And with a BJJ school, the culture is a dog eat dog, wolf pack mentality, that even if you don't want to compete, bro, you're still going to roll like you compete. And I believe that's wrong. And I think that's a huge disservice to your community and to jiu-jitsu. So don't get me started on that one, because it needs to be talked about, but things like that can be avoided.
Well, here's a great example. I'm going to talk about the point system next. Here's a great example. So right now I have a black belt who's coming in for free mat, and he's a top, like I mentioned him earlier in the beginning of the show, he's top ranked. He's retired, and he's coming in right now with a purple belt who's also nationally ranked. And I am nervous, not for me,
yeah,
but for everyone else. So like, I'm literally going to have to wrap up this podcast soon just because I don't trust them. I trust them. Yeah. I've rolled with them. I trust the black belt. Yeah. I've met him. I trust him. And I rolled with him. I let him roll my white belts. I watched. No one got hurt. My students hurt each other. There's always so much I can do about that. And it was mostly a size difference thing. There's always, and I just said, dude, really hard when you got a guy who's 215 pounds and another guy who's 170 pounds and they're grappling and they're both not beginners. Like one's a third stripe white belt and he's been more controversial topics in jiu-jitsu. He's been, what's the word I'm looking for? What's the word where they hold him? They just hold him there. Was it
a staller?
No, they hold him at the rank so that they can.
A sandbagger.
Yeah, he's a sandbagger. And he came to my school. He's coming to my school to do some extra training and he's going to join the program soon. And as soon as I told him, as soon as you join the program, this is going to stop. Like, as soon as you're officially the program, I'm talking to my instructor and we're going to get you a blue belt as soon as possible because you're not a three-star white belt. And and then my blue belt's rolling with this guy, right? And you know, he hurt his ankle. He held on to a triangle too long. He was trying to hold on to that triangle. But again, going back to that culture, what you just said, no matter what, whether you compete or not, whether you want to compete in that atmosphere or not, you are going to encounter people who do compete. And that's always a variable. And their attitude is very much an attitude of dog eat dog. And if you, the higher of a rank you have, the bigger of a target you have on your back. So I'm as a brown belt.
Yeah.
When I go roll with that purple belt, who's a heavyweight. I'm a light heavyweight when I'm not cutting weight. So right now I'm about 180, 175 pounds. And he's about 225 pounds. Right.
Yeah.
So like, I got to be really careful right now because I've never met this guy and I don't know what he's going to do. And sometimes what I'll do with people like that is I'll feel him out. And if I feel like this person's going to injure me, I'll let him, okay, you do whatever you want. I don't have an ego. If you feel you really want to do something, I'm not going to try to prove that I can win some sort of competition inside of inside of my gym. Sure. Right. I'm not here for that. But there is you're touching on a different aspect of jiu-jitsu, like kind of a darker thing that's happening within that community. Yeah. And then an outsider looking at this, it just scares them. So luckily I've controlled it this long. No one's gotten seriously injured, but that's my two cents on that, on what's happening there.
Yeah. You know, it's let me give it to you guys like this, right? Because my job is to get people to do jiu-jitsu. A new person walks into a BJJ school. Hi, I'm John, and I would like to learn jiu-jitsu. I watch the UFC. I want to learn how to defend myself. And the instructor goes, yes, we do jiu-jitsu. Come on in, and let's get you started. This person has no idea of what jiu-jitsu is. He looked it up on the internet a little bit, so on. And he walks in. He's already super nervous. He probably sat out in the parking lot for a while trying to muster up the courage to walk in. He works in a cubicle all day. He's not an athletic guy. So he goes into this BJJ school and immediately he's put on the floor with somebody and told, we're going to teach you how to do an armbar from the guard. And this person goes, well, I don't even know what the guard is. So then, you know, he's nervous. He start trying to learn some things. He's close up with somebody that he has no idea who they are. And then at the end of class, they go, hey, John, I'm going to put you with this purple belt and you're going to roll. It's your first day, but don't worry. Don't worry. Well, what do I do, coach? And the coach says, just don't tap. It's crazy, but this happens. Just don't tap. Or, hey, he's going to go easy on you. And this purple belt does go easy, but just demolishes this guy. So therefore his ego, this John's ego is down low already. And then the coach says, I'm going to put you with somebody who's a beginner as well. They're a white belt too. Both of them have no idea what's going on and they just maul each other. Well, guess what? Now John has a bunch of scratches on his face and he has to go to work in a professional environment. And he goes, I'm never going to do jiu-jitsu again because I got beat up. I didn't learn anything, right? So to me, that is such a disservice to jiu-jitsu, where it should be a very, very distinct thing that a beginner does in order to build their confidence and get them to fall in love with jiu-jitsu, to want to stick with jiu-jitsu. So, man, that to me, that is the number one thing in the jiu-jitsu community that really disservices the art, because these people are not coming in to be competitors. Jiu-jitsu is for everybody, whether you're short, fat, small, whatever. Everybody should be able to do jiu-jitsu and love it, right? But a stay-at-home mom that hasn't worked out in years is not going to be able to go inverted. She's not going to be, she won't be able to do a shrimp most likely. So what do we do as instructors for these people? We have to make sure that our curriculums, our culture of our school is a culture that is very inviting for new people that will stick with jiu-jitsu, not just do it for a month because they want to tough it out and then they never do it again. And this person thinks, I don't have what it takes for jiu-jitsu. And then they leave out all the people like the traditional guys, like other schools that are trying to change that and bring it to what it originally was Grandmaster Elio Gracie's big thing was, my jiu-jitsu is for the folks that don't have the physical attributes to defend themselves, not to go out and beat everybody up. So that's my two cents on that.
And that's what you're saying. So again, tying back to our thumbnail topic, that's an old school versus new school thing happening, where the new school is highly competitive. It's become a sport. So you have a lot of athletes. And as we know with athletes, they're highly competitive. It is dog eat dog. Well, the old school, yeah, they were competitive, but the sport aspect was kind of there. But this new aspect of the sport is, I don't know what, we're not making generalized statements.
Right.
Some of the new schools are going in that avenue.
Yeah, I would actually kind of modify that statement a little bit. It's not necessarily the traditional guys, because you're going to have a guy that started in the 90s, in the 80s, and goes, that's not what it was like for me. It was pojada all day. It was fight all day. And that's true. What I'm speaking towards is what Grandmaster Elio Gracie started and what he was trying to get his sons to do, that they do a very good job of. So jiu-jitsu had this big shift, right? When the Federation in jiu-jitsu was created, the competition started to take over. And in that time frame, that is when the competing and everything started, which was in like the 60s. So from that point, there was still that side of schools that were very traditional from Grandmaster Elio Gracie's wishes. But the competition scene took over. They were still practicing the pillars. They were still doing self-defense and striking and all that. They were slapping each other with rolling, everything like that. But it was that, like, that fighting mentality that really took over. And quite frankly, that is why in the 90s, early 2000s, Elio Gracie took that red belt off and he said, this is no longer my jiu-jitsu. And before he died, you'll see him with that navy belt, some pictures with that navy belt, as a protest of this competing, this like hard fighting thing that like everybody's eating each other alive. That's not my thing. He competed to show how good his art was. But at the end of the day, his thing was self-defense for the weaker person.
Okay. So, all right. So like we're almost getting to the end of our show. And what I want to do is kind of, before we go, we mentioned very quickly the point system. So I'm going to do a quick share screen and I'd like to keep my immersive view. What can we do here? Let's hope that this works. It might not, but I hope it does. Here to see. It look like that. Yeah, it should look like this. No, I want it to look like this. There you go. Layouts. Okay, so it should be like us. It would be us talking, and it should be the background. I don't know how well it's going to look like when I do it like that. I have no idea what they see, but if you can see okay. Okay, you can only see me in this view. You can't see Kailani. Kailani, did I say your name right?
Yeah, close enough.
Okay. Damn it. Okay, so real quick. It's just me, guys. Hi. He's still here. You can hear him in the background. We have knee on the belly, 2 points, takedown. Oh, a knee on the belly is when you grab the guy by the shoulders and you stick your knee on his stomach above the belt. If you want to be nice, you keep it on the stomach. If you want to be mean, you put it on their, you put it right down the center in the center of their chest so they can't breathe properly. A takedown, 2 points. A sweep. A sweep is when someone's in a position and you move them out of that position. Let's say you have your legs wrapped around them in something called clothes guard. You grab the guy and you turn him on his back. That's a sweep. That's 2 points. A guard pass. If someone has their legs wrapped around you in a guard, you get out of that. You get around them. You get their legs off of you and you get into a different position. That's 3 points. Back control. Back control is when you take their back. You haven't choked them yet. You just got the position. And you're holding them there. Your legs have to be on the outside. They can't be crossed. There's a background story to that because if they're crossed, they can do a leg lock, which they don't allow anymore. But either way, in some schools they do. Yada, yada, yada. Back control, 4 points. Back mount. Now, this is new. Back mount. I just told a student the other day, you're not going to get any points for back mount. You're going to have to take that back. So either way, back mount is when you have their back, you put your hooks in, you spread them out, and the guy's flat on his stomach with his arms out, and you get 4 points. And then you got mount, where it's the opposite of that position. They're on their back, you're on top of their stomach, you hold that for about 3 seconds, you get 4 points. So there's the breakdown of the system. Back mount's getting 4 points. I have to apologize to my student. All right, so okay, view. Let's go back, change immersive view. Let's hope this just started. There we go. Now it's kind of got to readjust everything. But anyway, yeah. So there's the spiel. There's the whole spiel of the point system. That's more sports. Now, then my question is that old school jiu-jitsu or new school jiu-jitsu?
So do you know one of the reasons why the point system is like that to where it is today?
Well, from what I've heard, it was supposed to be more self-defense oriented. The idea being that they didn't want their students to get hurt, going back of the tenets that you just said, they didn't want their students getting hurt by punching each other in the face and elbowing each other. Because they did, like you said, Helio's thing was to have your average person, weaker person, office worker, everyday Joe, still be able to practice this thing for self-defense. But he was very worried about injuries and people getting hurt. So he came up, there was this point system that got introduced off those tenets. I don't know if Helio came up with it. Supposedly, I think Carlos Gracie Jr. had a big influence on it. And the idea was that these positions in a self-defense situation are really bad. If someone's on top of you, they can knock you out. If someone's got your back, they can punch you and you can't even do anything because you can't even defend yourself because you got the back of your head and stuff. So that's where this idea came from. It was a self-defense perspective, and they decided to award points rather than having people beat the crap out of each other, if I got that right.
It comes down to, one of the reasons why is it came down to where you could most effectively strike that person from those positions. But again, that was that whole point system, this whole rule set, all this stuff, came along with the federation that was brought in. And I'm not talking about the IBJJF federation. I'm talking about the original federation. That was a group of students, two in particular that was the grand idea, but brought this idea forth to Elio and Carlos. And Elio became the president, and everybody has that picture of Grandmaster Elio with that red belt with the flag behind him. That's the Federation flag. And then you have Grandmaster Carlos Gracie Sr., who became the chairman of the board. So yes, they were head of things, but just like every other federation, they have other people bringing ideas, things like that. And that's where the point systems was really taking off, was where you could effectively strike somebody from. But it's really become twisted, just like every sport has. You look at, you know, I love the arts, but Taekwondo, Judo, they're working the system based off the points, but they're manipulating it, right? In order to win, which is fine, but that's the name of the game for the sport. So for the point system, like when I have professional competitors and I have MMA fighters, I tell them, don't worry about the points. We can't strike, we can't do certain things, but your main job is to dominate a position, control the position, survive if you need to, and then get the submission. Again, that is for competition. A lot of people, I tell them, just survive, because that's our main stead with Gracie Jiu-Jitsu, is to learn how to survive the altercation, not necessarily win. So I don't know when they raise their hand and say 3 points, I don't know what any of that means. I just tell my students, get the takedown, get the sub. And we're not a competition school by any means. I just have folks that like to compete and I support them. And it goes the same way for MMA. But for us, I don't think I have ever talked about the point system in my school other than teasing it.
I mean, I talk about the point system because I don't want them to look like noobs if they go somewhere else. Sure. So that's pretty much what it is. It's like, I'm always mentioning, because one of the things I can say from my experience of doing so much MMA and then coming mm-hmm. back to a big school that has a lot of money behind it, commercialized school, was the idea that I was treated like a noob for not knowing this point system. And
yeah,
dominating it once I knew it, but still not knowing the point system made it look like I was just a brawler who didn't know what they were doing. So because of that, I teach the point system. I say, hey, this is the point system. When they do something that's illegal, I say, hey, that's great. You know, if you're in MMA or in a self-defense situation and you can control a heel hook, you can control a leg lock and not, like in class, not hurt anybody, I'm not going to discourage you from doing that. I'm always going to discourage anything that will get someone injured. I don't care what it is. Yeah. But if you can do stuff that you within measure and not hurt anyone, but I will mention to you, that's illegal. By the way, that is illegal. That's an illegal move. That's a neck crank. You can't do that. You can, and you should, if you were defending yourself, but you can't do that under this system. I'll warn guys. Like, I was just teaching the roadhouse choke. Have you heard of that?
I have.
Yeah. I was just teaching the roadhouse choke last week. Okay. And I was like, this is an awesome move, but got to be careful. And if any of you guys, because some of the guys do like to compete, you got to be careful, because this is a very new move. And the difference between me putting pressure here and me grabbing here is very small. And a ref that doesn't know what you're doing might not know the difference. So yeah. you're going to put this under your 20% rule of techniques that are fun to do, fun to practice, but have a low percentage of success depending on how much you practice them, and would get you in trouble in a point system competition scenario, right?
Right.
And there's a distinction to be made in that too. And I mean, that's kind of related to our new school, old school, like having, bringing in that new school, old school conversation on the mm-hmm. mat, which it sounds like you're doing as well. Like, hey, this is why we do what we do.
For us, we do nothing competition-wise. In that, so we have a fundamentals program, And that fundamentals program is 100% dedicated to self-defense and a person, what, you know, what we don't even say it's an illegal move. What happened if a person grabs you by the throat? What happened, you know, things like this, what happens when you're on the ground and they're punching at you? In our advanced program, for us, our advanced program is diving even deeper on our self-defense, but we do the more beautiful modern jujitsu heavily in our advanced class after somebody knows how to deal with all of the self-defense stuff. But like we do in our school, we do footlocks. In our school, we do butterfly guard. But it's like a, it's like a, it's like a triangle. When in most jujitsu schools, at that bottom of that triangle, it's all sportive jujitsu, doesn't mean anything with self-defense, illegal, not illegal, whatever. And then once he gets to the tip of that triangle, now you learn a little self-defense, a little bear hugs from behind or something. Where for us, it's flip-flopped. It's all self-defense and then the sports stuff when you are proficient at the self-defense. And our students are tested on everything first. And one, it keeps things fun. Like my blue belts, my purple belts, they enjoy the sportive side. But they know for our school is 100% dedicated to trying to preserve the culture of self-defense jujitsu.
All right. I think that sums it up pretty good about old school versus new school. And if you didn't catch on, you're of the old school side of this, right?
Yeah.
I should have said that first. I should have said that first. But anyway, I think it's nice. We'll say it at the end. We'll say it at the end. He's of the old school philosophy of jiu-jitsu. Mm-hmm. Was there anything else you wanted to wrap up with, man? Anything you want to mention?
No, I thank you very much for having me on. And again, like for the folks that are trying to think of martial arts, whether it be Kajikembo or jiu-jitsu or anything like that, your best bet is to go and watch some classes, go do some research on that coach, on his lineage, go try a few classes and ask the questions. Hey, how does this translate to self-defense? Hey, how did, and just by watching the class, you will see what culture of school you're dealing with. I think that there are a few people in today's world of jiu-jitsu that are doing it amazing. And it just takes a little bit of research. And don't get confused with just because it has Gracie on the door doesn't mean necessarily that they are doing what you want. Don't just assume that the jiu-jitsu that you're seeing is jiu-jitsu because it's not. You know, just like in the Kajikembo realm, there's so many different Kajikembos. And sometimes we come across some folks that are very McDojo. And you're like, hold on, wait a second. How does this apply to any of this? Do your research, ask the questions, and watch, and don't deviate. Don't let a coach try to manipulate you into doing something just because they're doing it. So I would leave it with that. And I, again, thank you very much for having me on. And it was a good show. Thank you.
If anybody wants to train with you, where can they find you?
So we are in Clark Fork, Idaho, and our school is Origins Combatives.
Is there a website?
You can find us on, yep. You can find us on originscombatives.com or our Instagram or Facebook, same name. And again, there's a lot of other schools that are out there that we work with, that we admire, that do the exact same thing as us.
And just to make sure here, I'm going to put us in the classical view of things here. We're both here, if I haven't missed it. So right here, right? This is the site right here, right? Origins That's Combatives. I just typed in Origins Combatives and it came up right away. So if you type in Origins Combatives in Google, and this is probably someone else. So we're just going to keep it right there. That way they don't get confused.
Yeah.
So I typed in OriginCombatives.com and you'll find the site. You can go over there and train them. All right, everyone. Thank you very much for supporting the show. One of these at least once a month, sometimes more. Catch y'all next time.
Thank you.